News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is nearly 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. We've been taking your texts on the Mallory Piping text line, mostly about the president's Make America Wealthy Again event that he had at the
The tariff plan.
Yeah, all the tariff plan. Check out these two headlines this morning, Dalton.
Okay.
From Breitbart, you know, on the same story, basically. First time in decades, we have an American president saying no more to U.S. being world's piggy bank. So that would mean that they're for this, apparently. CNN, stocks tumble and dollar weakens as recession fears grip Wall Street.
Yeah.
So there's your two. That's where we're kind of leaving it up to see what you think about all this.
And I think both headlines can be, and in my opinion, are correct.
Yeah.
In the short term, there are folks worried certainly about a stock market crash and a real recession, or even worse, possible stagflation. There's a lot of people, especially the expert economists, saying how everything here could go wrong. But like Breitbart, there are a lot of people who have some hope and are saying, no, this is kind of exactly what we signed up for, a little short-term pain for long-term gain. And
as Breitbart said,
quit being the world's piggy bank.
Yeah. How long is the term? That's what people want to know, right?
That is what they want to know. And, of course, you have people that are in different stages of their lives who will be affected by this differently. You have folks who have, for years, stored away retirement funds. Maybe they've got it in the market. Maybe they just have it wrapped up in their 401k. But there are people that, you know, who are right now trying to live off retirement funds that are watching the market take a dive and are going, oh, this is not good for my future. But there's a ton of Americans, young Americans, and I'll put myself in that category, who, even if they do have some money in the stock market, probably weren't planning on pulling it anytime soon, especially for something like retirement. And they're willing to, hey, let's put up with it and see where it gets us in the long haul. So I think this, which I think that maybe the best way, I don't know if it's the best way to classify it, but class warfare in some sense, that you have big Wall Street, big finance, who absolutely hate what's going on here. But a major reason, if not the biggest reason, that Trump is in office right now, or are for, well, I mean, even narrow it down to the Rust Belt and how important the Rust Belt and some of these swing states were for his election. And why did so many maybe formerly liberal or independent voters vote for Trump in the Rust Belt? And I think a big factor in that is they've seen the decline in their local economies. They've seen these manufacturing businesses go away.
They're
They've
gone.
Seen jobs go one right after the other.
Yeah. I mean, that was a couple of things. Yes, for that, right? The evidence is right in front of them. And Trump kind of speaks their language. They trust him. They're like, this guy is for us. So, and he had a lot of them at the meeting yesterday.
He did. And he had that. It's so strange. And I think I retweeted someone who said it yesterday, but if you would have told someone in, you know, even the 90s, what would happen, that eventually someone named Donald Trump would be president and he would have the union on his side and the big bankers would be the enemy, or one of the enemies here. It's just such a turn in political narratives. And you know, the side stories that the angry left are now burning and destroying clean energy cars, the Teslas, with the Trump tie-in.
Isn't that amazing?
An absolutely wild timeline we're in. So kind of the bare bones about this big announcement yesterday, we were wondering whether it would be one flat tariff across the board. 20% was what someone, a few people had been tossing around there.
That's not what it is.
Or reciprocal tariffs, which are certainly kind of more in line with what Trump put out there yesterday. There is a baseline 10% tariff.
There's baseline 10%. And all those reciprocals, you'll notice too, at least I think I've got this right, they're about half of what we're being
tariffed
from those countries, China. So it depends on what the arrangement is now, and it's just about half of each tariff for each country.
And so when they said, and the number they used to come up with what each country is charging the U.S. as far as tariffs are concerned. And they wrote it out on that nice chart. It said tariffs charged to the USA, including currency manipulation and trade barriers. And, for instance, they had China tariffing the United States to the tune of 67%, yep. Vietnam to 90%. One like the UK, they just have it 10%, but the UK also getting that 10% across the board tariff until maybe they drop some tariffs or renegotiate. But there's also been some conversation online about how exactly the Trump administration came to that number. And folks online that may be and probably are much smarter than I saying that they actually used a different kind of formula to get to that number, and they don't like how they got to that number, but that's what they're working off of here. Yeah. And like Dan said, taking half of the number they came up with and tariffing in reciprocal fashion. So you have the 10% across the board. You have higher reciprocal tariffs on specific countries in China. You know, you add these tariffs to the ones that have already been levied on China, and I think they're up over 50% on tariffs for Chinese imports. The EU getting hit, Japan 24% tariff, Vietnam 46%, Taiwan 32%. Dan mentioned this morning the imported automobile 25% tariff. And then for now, the goods that had been agreed to in the USMCA, or whatever the acronym is for the trade agreement between China, the United States, and Mexico, those goods will currently be exempt, but they're also working through the fentanyl tariffs that Trump had promised if the border wasn't more secure and they were keeping fentanyl from coming through. I want to play this quick piece of audio for you. This is from it's from the Piers Morgan show as they were discussing these tariffs here yesterday. And if I can find, maybe I – okay, here she is. Ungar Sargon is her name, and she was on the Piers Morgan show discussing these tariffs yesterday. Of course, not the friendliest reception from Piers and Cenk Uygur, I think is the other fellow's name from the Young Turks. But he also had, looks like Carrie Lake, she had Carrie Lake on this same kind of panel. Anyway, this is Batya Ungar Sargon, who I guess knows quite a bit about tariffs, or at least thinks she does. Here's what her take on some of this was.
American Compass did a survey of just GOP voters. We know now that the majority of Americans who make under $100,000 a year now vote for the Republican Party. So they were, that was almost a means-tested poll. And they found that 77% of GOP voters, the working class, not the elites, are said that when they were asked, they said they would be willing to pay higher prices if it meant bringing back manufacturing, because of course in their mind they are going to be the beneficiaries of those manufacturing jobs. About Canada, a lot of people are asking, why Canada? We love Canada. Canada are our friends. Why wage this, you know, tariff war on Canada? And of course the answer is simple. Canada and Mexico are the back door to the American economy because we have this trade deal with them, the USMCA. So if there are no tariffs on China, if Canada and Mexico do not match our tariffs on China, China simply builds car manufacturing plants in Canada and in Mexico, which they have already done, and they use that in order to get tariff-free cars into the American market, which is exactly what President Trump is trying to get away from.
So, your thoughts on that, and also, let me say, I think they're trying to push this, and it's conflicting, the beliefs here and what Trump ran on. The media will push this narrative that many Trump voters, and they may be right, but I think a lot of Trump voters knew what they were signing up for. Mm-hmm. They'll say, hey, Trump voters who voted for lower prices now paying higher prices on this or that. Well, you heard that poll she just pointed out that quite a large portion of the electorate said they'd be willing to go through some short-term pain for the long-term gain. Mm-hmm. But as you asked, how long is too long with the short-term pain? But also, the Trump administration, while coming into office, they were a huge part of the campaign was, hey, look at how bad pricing has gotten under Joe Biden. Look at the bacon, the eggs, the groceries, as he said yesterday. And they sold people on this idea that they would immediately or very quickly get prices lowered. So your thoughts, there's a lot of conflicting, well, arguments, which are in general conflicting, but I could see so many sides of this. Really, I'm on team wait and see.
That's
and
what I am. I'm there.
And I'll be honest, I have some trust in this Trump administration. Like so many have said, Look at the people who have done things by the book and done things the way that the genius economists have told us to do it for years and years and years, and where has it gotten us?
Yeah, the book,
a hollowed out middle class.
The book from the elite, too. The book from, you know, are they really looking out for us? Two things about that statement, and that statement went on and on. On the Piers Morgan show, I watch it all the time. I cannot believe someone,
they let her talk.
There's so many people that got to jump in, interrupt. They did not with her. That was amazing in itself that they let her go on and on like that. Also from the text line, most of, this is unnamed texter, most of the millionaires in Congress got rich off of our dollar. Trump got rich through business deals. All these Monday morning quarterbacks need to sit down and shut up. Where was their plan before Trump took office? It's just an idea of what we're getting on the text line.
And I'll never get over the memes. They're always great. Anytime a huge story breaks, and someone posted yesterday, all of the national security experts regarding the Signal controversy, they've all put away their national security expert hats and are now putting on their tariff expert hats.
It happens every time. There's an issue, suddenly that same person, and, you know, Piers Morgan, it's the same people on. It's a rotation of 8 to 12 people, and they get on and they shout like they know everything about this particular item, and maybe they do because they do research or whatever, but you can't be an expert on everything, and sometimes you want to seek out the right voice.
Mm-hmm. That's right. This texter says it's kind of laughable to try to blame our, and this is all on the Mallory Piping text line, by the way. You could jump in, 251-343-0106. Texter says it's kind of laughable to try to blame our economic situation on one president or party. This has been building for decades. It's totally laughable that some of you don't realize it's going to take scorched earth and be painful for a while before we see equality in trade. I don't understand why people think we can be lenient with tariffs and lax on spending while we're trillions of dollars in debt. And it's that massive debt that's hanging over us that is kind of spurring this on. By the way, another theory I've seen, and I don't know how accurate it is, but with the big part of a huge chunk of our debt is set to be refinanced this year.
Mm-hmm.
And interest rates are awfully high.
Yep.
And so there's this theory that the Trump administration, through Scott Bessent here, who, if you're fired up about this on either side, I encourage you to at least listen to what Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, has been saying about tariffs and how they could be used and what he's currently saying about them.
He's a believer.
Important piece of the whole story is what Bessent believes.
Sure.
But that they're trying to bring the 10-year yield down. And again, I'm no perfect expert on this, but I've seen this theory enough over the last few months that maybe it's a possibility that they're trying to get interest rates dropped and in a major way before the debt refinancing comes later. Because you've heard so often that before long, the United States payment on the interest for our debt will be higher than our annual payment for defense spending, which is big, massive.
Just the interest.
So is it worth crashing this market just to get a better deal on refinancing the debt we've already incurred?
Well, you don't have to
one
do,
of the theories out there.
Don't have to do it in secret. You know, let us in on it. And I think that's one thing that the Trump administration, I think I can trust what they're saying is what they're going to do. And I think that's where Americans get frustrated when you feel like it's just a shell game and you don't even know what the heck's going on.
That's a great point there. This texter says it's kind of a mixed bag with these tariffs. If you negotiate with the country, then you're not bringing back manufacturing to the United States. You're just putting money in large corporations' pockets because they're not going to drop their prices. And how many radio shows have we all listened to saying they are not bringing manufacturing back to the United States? I'm not sure which radios. I think it's possible to bring manufacturing back to the United States. I don't think it's possible to bring mass manufacturing back to the United States and pay the same for goods that we're paying now. They're made by, in many ways, you know, cheap labor, slave labor, if you want to say that, for a lot of China. And a lot of the elites have been just fine with that slave labor because it brings more money into their pockets.
Yeah, hello, Nike.
Nike stock. I need to see where it is this morning. I think it took a dive overnight in some of the pre-trading. We'll have to take a look. Not a good day for the stock market so far, but that was kind of expected.
Yeah, I think it was.
We have a ton of texts as well to get to on the Mallory Piping text line. 251-343-0106. We'll hammer through all of those on the other side of the break.
Yeah, I want to do something really quick, a Doge update as we come out of the break, and then we'll get back to the text. But an amazing story from some money they found with Veterans Affairs. It is 8:21. Dan and Dalton and Mobile Mornings. Amazing story up in D.C. The Department of Veterans Affairs paid hundreds of thousands of dollars, not a year, a month, for website changes before canceling the contract. So they found this contract, and they were paying $380,000, the VA.
A month.
A month to whatever company administrates their website. $380,000 a month. They canceled the contract. One guy that was already working at the VA is now over there, is now doing that job.
Wow.
So $380,000 a month.
That's insane.
I know.
And it just kind of sounds like part and parcel with a lot of the other waste that they've been uncovering there at Doge.
It's only a matter of what are we not going to find out? Because it's all there.
I love this because I thought Ricky would be all on board with trying to bring down the debt. It's one of the things he's been complaining about for years, but he says America is bankrupt, no fixing that. And he wishes we were spending more time talking about, I guess he says, Israel is building a new Suez Canal. So I'll have to dive into that. But Ricky, I've been a little focused on the whole tariff discussion since yesterday. Excuse me. Art says, good morning, Dan and Dalton. If you're going to talk about tariffs, it would really be educational to find and provide the list of tariffs that Canada already charges us. Some of them are well over 100%. It's just not fair to them for us to have a tariff, but it's okay for them to have a tariff. Look it up. Yeah, I don't need to look it up, Art. I saw people posting it all week. With the dairy tariffs, and that's a ladder, right? It scales up. So the first gallon of milk that goes across the border, either not hit with the tariff or very low, but by the time you hit a certain threshold, and that was a big part of Trump's speech yesterday, he said, you know, it'll be spun as, look, they're not tariffing us here, but once you hit their thresholds, which Trump said are pretty low, then you end up getting hit with that full tariff. Todd says, it's about time, America first. We absolutely have to start manufacturing in the United States. Moz on the Mallory Piping text line says, if tariffs are so bad, why is it just fine for every other country to tariff us so substantially and terrible for us to tariff other countries? Texture here. This is CA. Morning. Mobile should change the name of the airport to Trump International. It will be too late by the end of April. Okay. I think they're working on naming a different airport Trump International, aren't they? Somebody put that through it in the house up there.
Gulf of America International Airport.
Gulf of America International Airport. The Real Sam says, would it be crazy to think that the government could somehow pass on the money that they're getting from tariffs to the people who are suffering from the tariffs in America, the consumers? So I see what you're saying. If these tariffs are bringing in the hundreds of billions of dollars to the coffers of the government that they and then are being passed to the consumer that are paying for it, then why didn't the government kind of make it even by giving them money over? I don't know how exactly that would work, except for, you know, these checks like they sent out during COVID. Michael, and then how does that solve the debt issue, right? Which is kind of what they're working towards here. Michael says, I have no problem with the tariffs. If American workers can't produce stuff and be able to sell them for a profit, then they won't have a job and no money to buy the cheaper products. Jason says, the Bhatia comments from the Bill Maher show are worth a listen to. She is terrific. Said, I'm excited about new tariffs and that we have a president willing to tackle the debt issue and actually plan for the future. I would ask those complaining, do you just want more of the same? How can anyone be against America, have a more equal playing field, and where do your loyalties lie? We already see several countries willing to deal.
Do we have? If we're going to get the jobs, Dalton, this is a serious question. If we're going to have new manufacturing jobs, do we have enough workforce backbone in this country or work ethic to fill those jobs?
The stats would tell you no when you look at the workforce participation rate. Yeah. But is the workforce participation rate hovering in the mid-50s? Because
the wage.
There are too many entitlements out there.
Entitlements plus wage, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's something that's going to have to be considered.
And wages will have to go up, right, in order to drive that. Keith says, get Dave Ramsey involved in the budget process and put the federal government on the envelope system. That would be a wake-up call to everybody in the government. Yeah. And he would not allow the government to buy any new vehicles going forward. They would have to be used vehicles, for sure, if Dave Ramsey's involved there. My retirement has dropped its value by 11% in the first 100 days of the Trump presidency. Anybody got a couple extra Trump flags they can give me? I can't afford to buy one. That one from a texter. And Tim and Foley, will anybody document the price change for a foreign automobile current price to after tariff price before we go shopping for new cars? And thanks for the text. We'll try to keep these going through the hour. 251-343-0106.
Zero in on some local stuff with Rob Holbert from Lagniappe Mobile. He's on the way next. Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Well, we knew it would be an active morning. We knew it would be one where a lot of our audience is participating with us and a little give and take on the text line. 251-343-0106. How long is this tariff talk going to go? How long are we gonna, how long is this going to be story number one?
This tariff talk, it'll be a mainstay until we're at war with Iran, I would imagine. And then that might take story number one.
Well, that's a wonderful enlightening comment to make us feel better on this Thursday.
That's right. 8:35. Let's talk about some local news here with Rob Holbert, Lagniappe, lagniappemobile.com, the best local paper. And I would argue the best paper statewide and beyond. Hey, Rob, good morning.
Oh, now that's sweet. I mean, you know, we're the only local paper, so I can take best local. But yeah, statewide, that's nice.
Well, yeah. I mean, honestly, you cover things across the state that papers that might have offices right next door don't cover.
Rob, you've done stories that made people leave the state.
I think we have stirred up a lot of the biggest stories in the state in recent. In the last year or so, I think we've got a lot of good things that we've kind of stirred up are still going.
Certainly have, and you get to pay a little less on fuel when the story's in our own backyard, like the Mobile River Bridge and Bayway project. That, along with another maybe less talked about problem, but still an issue for many people in Mobile, how long it's taking to get McGregor to the finish line.
McGregor. We kind of combined the two sort of forever projects this week and sort of looking at when's one going to start and when's the other going to end. And the surprising thing to me, Brady Petrie wrote the story, the thing that really surprised me was when he said the McGregor project is only about 6 months behind schedule, because I thought it was like 6 years behind schedule. But it is, according to, people at the city said, it originally was supposed to be finished sometime right around now, and they're aiming, they think by the end of the year it will be done. The snarl that's been there for a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it'll be interesting. Sorry, Dan.
No, that's right.
When things lighten up, once McGregor opens, I'm interested to see how things look, on Bitten Spur and Airport and the traffic around. Of course, I think many of us waiting for that to lighten up a little bit. But I guess we're coming up on 2 years now, and I thought it was interesting, kind of the response from the city was, well, the 2 years was meant for the actual paving and the road work, but when you add in the utility work that had to go in beforehand, that's kind of where some of that extra 6 months comes in, and then you add in some of the delays.
Yeah, they basically had to take the thing down to the bedrock and really a lot of stuff underneath there, sewer and various other utilities, power, and I think probably some maybe even phone lines, who knows, back from then. But, I mean, there's a lot of stuff they had to do. I think they said there were, like, seven different things they had to deal with in that regard. So, it's taken them a while, obviously. And I'm sure the people who live in that area and have to drive through that area on a daily basis are just like, it's purgatory, I'm sure.
Mm. Well, it's gotten to the point, Rob, I'll be honest with you, that I know it no longer feels like a big problem for me, because I've already trained my brain where you can't go that way. It could be a shortcut up to Airport Boulevard and the shopping at that area. And I just write that off now. Like, I already know that's not the way to go. So by the time we get to the end of this thing, I will have been trained otherwise. So we'll see.
It's like we're all trained not to get on the Bayway, we're all trained.
Exactly. You're right.
It's like I did it against better judgment. I did it about 2 months ago and immediately got in like a 35-minute traffic jam. And I was just like, why did I do this to myself? This is, just the dumbest thing I can do. I know better, but I did it anyway.
Yeah.
So we're talking about that, and again, that is they're saying, hey, it's going to be, they're still sticking with the end of the year time frame for breaking ground on it. And even though there was the the breakup between Al Dodd and the conglomeration of companies that were to build the Bayway, they say that's going to all be okay and we're going to move on and it won't really affect the time frame of the project, which is about 75 years. But I don't, at this point, the big issue, I mean, really the bigger issue is we have less than $1 billion in funding that is quote unquote secured, even though most of that is still sitting in D.C. and has not been released. And, you know, given the way things are right now, it's kind of, although Shamari figures, Congressman figures says, doesn't think there's any reason that would go away, but it still is, you know, it's out there. So who knows what can happen. But we're still way, way short. I mean, we're talking $3.5 billion. And then there's a hope that we'll get a 49% of it taken care of with a TIFIA loan from the federal government. But I still, my math skills being what they are, I can figure that doesn't add up to 100%.
No.
So I don't know exactly where we are in total funding on it.
And the federal government right now dying to hand out grants and loans, if you've noticed.
Yeah, not to go back to the theme earlier, but I'm sure that you know, all the tariffs will pay for it. So we'll
possibly. Tolls are on the way, right? I mean, higher tolls. That's what I'm thinking. No way you get out of this without a $10 two-way trip.
Well, I mean, I think the toll issue is really going to be to retire the debt, and which I still think is a smarter move than, you know, the original plan that Kay Ivey had hatched was this public-private thing. It was going to be billions of dollars in public-private, and another, you know, some private company would basically own the bridge and decide when and if it would ever take tolls off. And when, you know, when I looked around the country at any kind of deal like that, they've never taken them off, and they've always raised them, and they don't really, you know, they keep going up and up. So I that company would have made billions and billions. I still think it makes the most sense for the government to bond it out, pay for it, and then use the toll for a while to retire that debt, and then go toll free. You know,
doesn't Trump love Alabama? He wins it decisively any time that he runs, and so Alabama's all behind Trump. And isn't he going to wave a wand at some point and some of that money's going to come our way?
He seems a little distracted right now.
Yeah,
I don't know.
By about 29
I don't know
issues.
Exactly what, I don't know what, you know, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with that. I mean, Biden passed a $1 trillion infrastructure bill, and you would think out of that $1 trillion, there would have been money for this. Yeah. This bridge project, which is, you know, it's a federal project. It's a federal roadway.
Yeah.
I mean, as I've said from a million times, the federal government should be paying for this. It is their road, but you know, it's, they don't want to do it.
And get Shamari on it.
I think we've got, those are, to me, that's a bigger issue, I think, even than the issue of having the, you know, having to kind of redo some things with who's building what out there. I think that's the bigger issue.
Let's get into some more local issues here, and the whole wave transit and possible strike on the way, and learning a lot about how, you know, local government works. You get stories now and then where you're like, oh yeah, so that's how this works. And the city now, you know, funding Wave Transit to the tune of $10 million a year. It's gone up, I think, more than doubled over the last 4 years. But you have the Wave Transit workers who work for this management company, TransDev or TransRev, I can't remember. And they're saying, hey, unless we get higher pay like the drivers in Montgomery, and until you keep these crazies off our buses or at least make our jobs more tolerable, we're going to strike. And the city's saying, wow, we're paying a lot of money per rider. We need to think of some other ways to go about this.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and couch this as, this is why you need a local newspaper, and this is why, you know, people who are paying subscriptions, this is what you're getting for it. We did this story the other day. Brady Petrie decided, hey, I'm going to look at this because of all these strike information going on and all the things that are happening. He said, hey, I'm going to look at what we're paying, what we're doing. We pay $10 million a year, essentially, from what we can gather. I mean, the city, for whatever reason, couldn't give us a solid number on how much the ridership actually brings in. But, you know, we broke out the calculators and it figured somewhere between $900,000 and $850,000 a year comes in from the riders. There are like 557,000 individual rides, individual trips. And when you break that down to per day, it's like 1,500 trips a day. But, you know, that's, I mean, if you say, well, some of those people certainly are probably going to be going two ways, that's even, you know, you're probably dealing with hundreds of riders a day, not thousands. I mean, essentially it breaks down to the city paying $16 per ride.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, they could get them an Uber.
Or an ambulance.
And probably would be cheaper. Yeah. Or call an ambulance. Yeah. Let's not put that out there again. That's probably not going to help the ambulance drivers. But it is, you know, it is really, I think it's eye-opening to say, you know, this is, when you look at it, say that we're paying at this point basically $16 per ride. And when you look at those buses, as I like to joke, that they're hauling air all over town, mostly, you know, it is not, you don't see very many people, if any, other than the person driving on the bus often. There's obviously an issue here that needs to be addressed. And I think the next mayor certainly will have that on their plate.
And you can often tell a lot about how business is being ran, even when you're talking from, you know, a bird's eye view and looking at something. But just look at the pricing. And one of the things I found most notable in Brady's story is that for a one-way trip, buying two one-way tickets is cheaper than buying a two-way ticket on the transit.
Yeah, a round-trip ticket costs $3. Two one-way tickets would cost you $2.50. So, which I was sort of like, when I read that, I'm like, I'm reading it, I'm going, Brady's this right? That doesn't, I thought generally you got a discount from the round trip, not the other way around. I mean, why, it doesn't make any sense. Maybe there's somebody that would explain it, but it makes some sense, but it didn't make obvious sense right off the bat.
No, but it makes sense for how this is being managed. If that's what the pricing is,
gives you an idea.
Gives you an idea,
and
yeah.
By the way, Rob and Dalton, I am attracted to shiny things. That's my nature and the nature of most four-year-olds. And
yeah.
I see the shiny airport terminal, I guess, is on the cover of Lady App. And I received, did you get the email this morning from?
I don't think so.
Okay, I got an email yesterday, and I got it from Andy Wilson, Executive Director of Mobile Airport Authority. Little update on what's going on out there.
Dear Dan.
I didn't even know Andy was the new guy, but in any event, thank you for the email. And what do you make of it, Rob? You're looking that thing over, huh?
I mean, it looks, you know, it looks good. We'll see when it gets done. And I mean, I think it'd be a nice facility. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the big thing we have to do is just make sure that we get carriers in here that are going to bring prices down. That's, I mean, as I've said from the very beginning, if people are willing to drive to New Orleans, they're willing to drive to Pensacola, the movement of the airport from West Mobile, where most people in Mobile live, honestly, is not, I don't know that that's the number one issue is location. The number one issue, obviously, is price for everybody around here.
Yeah.
Got to make sure the prices are lower.
Yeah, and you want, kind of like you mentioned, good destinations for people. And it doesn't have to be your standard destinations, but where folks around here like to travel to, I think is important. And I insist they keep the shoe shine in the new airport.
Yeah,
you got to have
a
shoe shine.
Heck yeah.
You got to have a shoe shine.
You have to have the shoe shine.
I agree with that. Yeah,
it seems like the airport
location. I'll drive out there just to get a shoe shine.
The airport location is maybe more beneficial for people who are coming to town because of the, you know, the near downtown, their hotels and everything like that. So I know that when my family would come in for weddings or whatever, it was really a pain in the neck just to get them to where, and many of them would stay downtown. So it felt like a 30-minute ride to get them to their destination, where now it'll be maybe 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be a lot better. I mean, but it's not a inconsequential ride to go to Pensacola either. And I don't know if you've been over there lately, but there's zero parking. It is every time I've flown out of Pensacola in the last year, a couple of times, and it is just, there's no parking. You've got to park a long way away. So, it's a very busy airport at this point. And so that, you know, that inconvenience, it is still an inconvenience. You've got to get the prices to the point where people are like, hey, I'm not dealing with that.
Amen.
It's got to be, it's a price issue all the way around, 100%. It won't work the way they want it to work unless the prices are competitive.
I agree. Hey, Rob, also folks need to vote in the nappies nomination period running up at the end of this
it
week.
It is running out on Sunday, I think. And it's, yeah, so this is the time when you can write your name in, mm-hmm. write your favorite place's name in. You know, this is it. This is where we get the finalists from. So the, you know, the days are, the clock's ticking. We've got lots and lots and lots of votes, so get after it.
And of course, subscribe, lanyapmobile.com. Rob, thanks again for coming on with us.
All right, guys. Y'all have a great weekend.
You got it. Rob Holbert with Lanyap Mobile. Morning. Would appreciate your vote.
Yes. Sure. So, Pensacola, their airport, I believe, still doing a lot of changing to their parking. We were out there. We flew out of Pensacola to go to Pennsylvania with some connections along the way. My dad ended up parking in the farthest lot and taking the shuttle. He was out by, I guess, is that Pensacola High School over there
Are
nearby?
Are you kidding me?
And so, yeah, that parking is an issue right now in Pensacola.
Wow.
850 more Mobile Mornings. We'll get to the rest of these texts on the other side.
Text line, the Mallory Piping text line, 251-343-0106. Gardner says, what about parking at the new airport? What is it, five-level parking garage?
Yeah, five-level parking garage.
So what's the problem in Pensacola? Gardner said he tried to fly out of Pensacola, too. He had a problem there trying to find a space.
Yeah, well, I think they're redoing a lot of their parking lots, if I understand or remember correctly. So having to shuffle some of the parking around. I know the parking garage was chock full when we pulled in. But they have shuttles. And like I said, yeah, I know you were, because you said you have a couple flights maybe coming up. It's not that bad, especially when you consider some of the places you might end up and what parking, like in at O'Hare, which was one of our connecting flights, I think there and back, even taxiing around on the plane, which we flew in a brand new Airbus one leg of one of our trips, and then in the big Boeing in another part of it.
You went to O'Hare.
The new Airbus was sweet.
On the way to Pennsylvania, this was that trip?
Yes.
Okay. So.
Yeah. And so, but we taxied around in the plane for like 20 minutes. Like,
when you landed?
Just riding, landing and maybe less so taking off, but definitely when we landed for the connecting flight, we went like 20 minutes just riding around O'Hare in the plane. And the pilot said, hey, they kind of moved things around on us. So this drive is pretty standard now. We took an overpass over traffic in this massive plane. Anyway,
on a bridge over a highway.
Yeah, of you that fly a lot more, you're probably like, "Yeah, that's old news, man."
Yeah.
But all things considered, even with the tough parking in Pensacola, shuttle will get you there in 5-10 minutes.
All right.
Furthest out you have to go.
All right.
So let's see. Text line. Monty says every problem on this planet stems from greed from politicians, leaders, and corporations. They steal from the working class and give it to the minorities and mentally ill to pacify them. That's what Monty had to say on the text line. Texter here says, a toll on an interstate highway irritates the hell out of me. You and me both, Texter. Let's see. Michael says, can you ask Rob how many unique riders that use the wave every year? Yeah, of those numbers, and what do you say, 1,500 trips a day, and I don't know how many people are on them during those trips, but as far as unique riders, the pool is probably not that big.
No.
It's probably the same people using it over and over.
Yes.
Save the Eastern Shore. Let's just eliminate the Bayway and take 65, is what Texter here has to say. Let's see. Ricky says, I'm praying for a Christian governor to be elected for Alabama, and Ricky would be an awesome governor for Alabama. We'll put you on the list, Ricky.
He nominated himself?
He just nominated himself for governor. So watch out, Ainsworth. Watch out, Tuberville. Ricky is now running.
Yeah.
And Sexter says, Gulf Shores, Trump Gulf Regional Airport. So keep the text, 251-343-0106. I don't know if this is big news, Dan, but it interests me. The Michelin Guide is finally heading to the American South. I did not realize, because I'm not a Michelin Guide connoisseur with the four-star, five-star restaurants and the like, but they've never surveyed the South.
What?
Yeah, hard to believe.
There's restaurants in New Orleans that win those things all the time.
That's what I assumed. Maybe those are like the James Beard Awards or Zagat's.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe it's Beard.
But they'll have, beginning this year, a new regional edition to cover restaurants in Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, both Carolinas, and Tennessee. And Michelin didn't even debut in North America until 2005.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Since then, they've worked up, I guess, a Texas guide and maybe an Atlanta guide. Coming to Mobile coming to the American South for the first time.
Well, you know what? I hate to say this. I don't think tensions could get any higher between Bucky's and Wawa. But now you got a Michelin on the line.
Yeah.
And those Italian sandwiches at Wawa.
What? How many stars do you think the Michelin is going to give both Bucky's and Wawa? Is there a high enough star?
All right. Had a good time today with y'all. It's Dan and Dalton wrapping it up and going to make room for Jeff Poor, who's next.